Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak and say something. I pray for your blessings and permission. As we continue on in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're discussing the Madhya Lila, chapter number 4, entitled Sri Madhavendra Puri's Devotional Service. And today we'll be reading, I'll read from text number 63, and then 77 we'll do together. After the body of the deity was cleansed, he was dressed very nicely with new garments. Then sandalwood pulp, tulsi garlands, and other fragrant flower garlands were placed upon the body of the deity. After the bathing ceremony was finished, incense and lamps were burned, all kinds of food offered before the deity. These foods included yogurt, milk, and many sweetmeats, as were received. The deity was first offered many varieties of food, and then sent to drinking water in new pots, and then water for washing the mouth. Finally, pan, mixed with a variety of spices, was offered. After the last offering of tambula and pan, bhoga artik was performed. Finally, everyone offering various prayers and then obeisances, falling flat before the deity in full surrender. As soon as the people of the village had understood that the deity was going to be installed, they had brought their entire stocks of rice, dal, and wheat flour. They brought such large quantities that the entire surface of the top of the hill was filled. Sometimes it's like that at the manor. When they bring donations, you can't walk through the corridor. It's all, when the villagers brought their stock of rice, dal, and flour, the potters of the village brought all kinds of cooking pots, and in the morning the cooking began. 10 brahmanas cooked the food grains and 5 brahmanas cooked both dry and liquid vegetables. The vegetable preparations were made from various kinds of spinach, roots and fruits collected from the forest. And someone had made bada and badi by mashing dal. In this way, the brahmanas prepared all kinds of foods. 5 to 7 men had prepared a huge quantity of chapatis, which were sufficiently covered with ghee, as were all the vegetables, rice and dal. All the cooked rice was stacked on palasa leaves, which were on new cloths spread over the ground. Around the stack of cooked rice were stacks of chapatis, and all the vegetables and liquid vegetable preparations were placed in different pots and put around them. Pots of yogurt, milk, buttermilk, shikharini, sweet rice, cream, and solid cream were placed alongside the vegetables. Purport: in this kind of ceremony, which is called anakut, cooked rice is stacked like a small mountain for prasadam distribution. In this way, the anakut ceremony was performed, and Sri Madhavendra Puri Goswami personally offered everything to Gopal. Many water pots were filled with scented water for drinking, and Lord Sri Gopal, who had been hungry for many days, ate everything offered to him. Okay, ready for breakfast? It's like the wrong passage to be reading at this time. Okay, so reading from 77. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Although Sri Gopal ate everything offered, still by the touch of his transcendental hand, everything remained as before. Purport: the atheist cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing in the form of the deity, can eat all the food offered by his devotees. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:26, Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktiya prayachati tadaham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatatmanah. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. The Lord is Purna, complete, and therefore he eats everything offered by his devotees. However, by the touch of his transcendental hand, all the food remains exactly as before. It is the quality that is changed. Before the food was offered, it was something else. But after it is offered, the food acquires a transcendental quality. Because the Lord is Purna, he remains the same even after eating. Purnasya Purna Madaya Purnameva Vashishyate. The food is offered to Krishna. is as qualitatively as good as Krishna, just as Krishna is avyaya, indestructible, the food eaten by Krishna, being identical with him, remains as before. Apart from this, Krishna can eat the food with any one of his transcendental senses. He can eat by seeing the food or by touching it. No one should think that it is necessary for Krishna to eat. He does not become hungry like an ordinary human being. Nonetheless, he presents himself as being hungry, and as such, he can eat everything and anything regardless of quantity. The philosophy underlying Krishna's eating is understandable by our transcendental senses. When our senses are purified by constantly being engaged in devotional service of the Lord, we can understand Krishna's activities, names, forms, qualities, pastimes, and entourage. Ata Shri Krishna namadi na bhavet krayam indriye sevan mukhehi jivado svayameva spuratyada. No one can understand Krishna by blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.234. The devotees understand Krishna through revelation. It is not possible for a mundane scholar to understand Krishna and his pastimes through research work on the non-devotional platform. Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay. Just check that is end. Here we're hearing of the interactions between Madhavendra Puri and Gopal. These are interactions on a very, very deep level. The Lord is transcendental and his devotee is transcendental. Here Srila Prabhupada makes the point that Gopal, just by seeing the food, ate the food. Just like the other day we were joking with Srinivas Prabhu, because he had to wear a mask for that. So then we saw him in the ashram, and then he said, "Srinivas, why are you not wearing your mask?" He said, "It's lunchtime, and I can't eat with my eyes like Krishna." He said, "After this many years of chanting, Srinivas Prabhu, you still can't eat through your eyes. What have you been doing all these years?" So he took it in good spirit. Who can eat through the eyes? Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. Only Krishna. Because any one of Krishna's senses can perform the function of any other sense. And therefore the Lord has transcendental senses. And here the point is being made that the devotee who has transcendental senses can enter into that world of transcendence with Krishna. Krishna has transcendental senses, but if you don't have transcendental senses, you cannot see Krishna's transcendental hand in everything. But the devotees who have elevated themselves, sevan mukhe hi jivado, by giving their life in service, by giving their life in selfless sacrifice, by showing their complete dedication to Krishna, Krishna then transcendentalizes their entire senses, opens up the doors to spiritual revelation by which they can perceive the spiritual dimension of life. Sanatan Goswami is with Madan Mohan, and how much transcendental exchange he is having because of his complete dedication. Madan Mohan has opened and revealed himself to Sanatan Goswami such that they're having transcendental argument. "Oh, Babaji, Sanatan Goswami, how you just give me some chapati? At least give me some salt. So dry, I can't eat it." "No, no, Madan Mohan, you asking for all these things. Today you ask for salt, tomorrow you ask for sweet rice. How you speak to me like this?" Who can understand such exchanges? The Goswamis are having such exchanges. It's interesting, in the age of the Goswamis, you hear about how the Goswamis, they would like include the deity in a will. Because the deity is a person. So you include. Godruma is also signing up people. You can leave your house to Radha Gokulananda. Or when in the time of the Goswamis, when people would make an agreement, like say I'm making an agreement with Sankirtan Priya. It's like, okay, let's bring the deity here. Let's bring the deity to witness this. Because these devotees are on that level where they can see, no, the deity is active. Who can understand the elevation of such devotees? Then we go to even more extremely transcendental devotees like Vamsidas Babaji, who was having so much transcendental exchange with his deities. Factually, he would not speak to anyone directly. He would only speak to his deities. So if Mohan came to me asking me some question, he would reply, but he would look at his deities and say, yeah, this is the answer to your question. He's asking me this question. So it's like bewildering. Vamsidas Babaji had 6 deities. Gaur Gadadhar, Radha Krishna, Gopal, and Nityananda. 6 deities he had. So he was so transcendental in his exchange with the deities that sometimes he would offer bhoga, sometimes not. Sometimes wake them up, sometimes not. Sometimes dress them, sometimes not. So one day one villager came to him, he said, Babaji, you have not given your Thakurji, your deities, you didn't give any bhoga for the last 3 days. How you worship the deities like this? You know what Vamsidas Babaji said? He said, look, Gaur Gadadhar are there. They're good friends. If they want, they can cook for each other. He said, this Gopal is here, but Gopal, factually, this is Bal Gopal. He's only drinking milk. So every day a cow is coming here outside of the house. If he wants, he can go and get some milk from the cow. No problem. He said, this Radha Krishna, I don't know. Every night they're going out into the forests of Vrindavan doing this. Sometimes they're here, sometimes not here. I don't know what their program is, so I don't know. And Nityananda? He said, Nityananda is an avadut, just like me. We're on the same page. Who can understand such exchange? Who can understand such exchange between the devotee and the Lord? Yes, the Lord is having transcendental senses, but as soon as the devotee transcendentalizes their senses, they become privy to that world. Just imagine Srila Prabhupada in Juhu. The devotees wanted to just leave that place. No one was there. It was a snake-infested, rat-infested swamp. And practically there were so many legal challenges. The devotees just couldn't understand why they were there. One time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I think it was, came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, why are we even here trying to build a temple? There's so many obstacles. And factually, this place, there's no one even here to preach to. Preach to the rats in the swamp. Prabhupada looked at him and he said, I brought Radha Ras Bihari here. And I promised Radha Ras Bihari I would make a temple for them here. So how can I go back on my word? I mean, just think about that for a moment. Prabhupada said, I promised them I would make a temple for them. So how can you expect me to leave? Whatever challenge there may be, it doesn't matter. I gave my promise to the Lord. Because a devotee is functioning with the Lord on that level. This is a person, and we're having an exchange, and I gave my word. So the devotees are having this exchange, and Madhavendra Puri, he was also having this exchange with Gopal, because factually Gopal was just, he came in his dream 3 times. Madhavendra Puri was an incredibly amazing Vaishnav. He's considered to be the root, the seed, and the root of the Gaudiya Vaishnav Bhakti Kalpataru. If we fast forward, then we know that Shyamananda, Narottam, and Srinivas were the ones who distributed pure love of God. But before distributing pure love of God, it had to be documented. So who documented how to develop pure love of God? The Goswamis. So in order for something to be distributed, first it has to be documented. But before it can even be documented, it has to be demonstrated. And who demonstrated love of God? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prema Purushottam. For something to be distributed, it has to be documented. For something to document it, it has to be demonstrated. But for something to be demonstrated, first it has to be discovered. And who was the one who discovered pure love of Godhead in the conjugal mellow, in the deep moods of separation of Radha and Krishna? That was Madhavendra Puri. So Madhavendra Puri was just walking around, traveling as a sannyasi, walking here or there, singing the verse. Aidinadayadranathe maturanath kadavalokyase ridayam tvad aloka kartaram daita brahmyati kim karomi aham. You're singing this beautiful verse. Aidinadayadranathe, O my Lord, the deliverer of the most fallen. Maturanatha Kadavalokya say, O Maturanath, Krishna, where are you? Ridayam Tvad Aloka Kataram, not seeing you, Krishna, my heart is becoming agitated, my heart is empty, my heart is practically being ripped apart. Brahmyati Kim Karomi Aham. Confused, bewildered, unaware what I should be doing. I'm just wandering aimlessly. What shall I do? What shall I do? How will I survive? How will I maintain my life? So it's, people could not understand this because no one had seen it before. What to speak of, people in general couldn't understand his mood. Even his own disciples couldn't understand his mood because it's explained that, of course, Madhavendra Puri had many disciples, but two disciples in stark contrast were Ishvara Puri and Ramachandra Puri. And Ramachandra Puri, when he heard all of these words, "Oh Lord, where are you? My heart is broken. I can't maintain my life. What will I do?" He just thought, "What are all these mundane things? Isn't it?" He didn't know. He couldn't understand. Just like, you know, if you like look at Top of the Pops, you know, the charts, then there's all these songs which are of a similar nature, if you think about it. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, and the very next day, you threw it away, and then all these love songs, you think, this is so mundane. It's so mundane. But what Ramachandra Puri couldn't realize is this is actually the real sentiment towards the real object of love, with the real mood of purity and transcendental exchange. He couldn't understand that. So Madhavendra Puri is such a Vaishnav. We are known as Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So our link to the Madhva Sampradaya primarily comes from Madhavendra Puri. If you read books like Prameya Ratnavali and Bhakti Ratnakar, even Gaura Ganadesh Deepika, then it's explained that Madhavendra Puri's spiritual master was Lakshmipati Tirtha, his spiritual master was Vyas Tirtha. And in this way, through Madhavendra Puri, we're being linked to the Madhva Sampradaya. And then, of course, Madhavendra Puri had many disciples, Ishvara Puri, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, all of these great souls. And then from Ishvara Puri comes Mahaprabhu, and in this way, we're connected to Madhavendra Puri. So these are the transcendental exchanges. Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, Ata Shri Krishna Namadi, you will never be able to understand Krishna's name, fame, form, qualities, pastimes, until Grayam Indriye, the blunt material senses, have been spiritualized by service. How much transcendental exchange are we able to have with Krishna? When you offer the food to Krishna, are you 100% sure Krishna has eaten it, Arun? Not sure. When you make a prayer, Cyrus, are you 100% sure Krishna has heard it? 85%. You might have to give us a class to explain how you come to that number. when you offer Krishna some service, are you sure he's happy? No. How much transcendental exchange are we able to have with Krishna? How much are we able to perceive Krishna and how he's feeling about what we're doing? 85%? 60%? 20%? Nothing? It's an interesting question to ask. How much are we actually interacting with Krishna directly in the Krishna consciousness movement? How much are we able to actually see Krishna in action and perceive his transcendental acts? How much? Is that the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement? To have a relationship with Krishna? Yes? So then if we're not able to have that exchange with Krishna, then how do we know whether we're going in the right direction? How do we know whether we're actually performing devotional service? How do we know if all the acts and sacrifices and all the things that we're doing are actually having an effect on us? That's an interesting question. Now, I'm not going to open it up to debate at this point, as we did last week. That got a bit out of hand. Let me say this. There is an interesting verse in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Maharaj Nimi has approached the Nava Yogendras, and the Nava Yogendras give this incredible disposition on devotional service. It's like far out, amazing, one of the most impressive sections of the Bhagavatam, the first five chapters of the 11th canto. Many amazing verses are there, but in one beautiful verse, the Nava Yogendras say, Bhakti Pareshan Ubhavo Viraktir Anyatra Chesha Trika Eka Kalaha Prapadyamanasya yathashnatashustu stipustikshud apayonugasham. Beautiful verse. When you eat, three things happen. Tushti, you get satisfaction. Pushti, you get nourishment. And shud apayo, your hunger subsides. Right? When you eat, these three things happen. Then you know you're eating. Similarly, when you practice devotional service, three things should happen. Just like you get tushti when you eat, you get satisfaction. When you perform bhakti, you should get more bhakti, devotion. Joy of devotion you should experience, number one. Just like when you eat, you feel the joy, the satisfaction of eating. When you practice devotional service, you should experience the joy of devotion. Just like when you eat, you get pushti, nourishment. The body is energized. Similarly, when you practice devotional service, bhakti, pareshanu bhavo. Pareshanu bhavo. Para Isha, the Supreme Lord, bhavo, you get direct experience of the Lord. You should get direct experience of the Lord. And just as when you eat, shud apayo, your hunger subsides. Similarly, if you're actually practicing devotional service, then your material desires should subside. So if you want to know whether you're actually performing devotional service, whether everything that you're doing from waking up at a ridiculously early hour in the morning, all day doing all kinds of tasks, whether you want to know whether it's actually being effective, then ask yourself, am I feeling the joy of devotion? Am I experiencing a direct contact with the Lord? And am I subsiding in my material desires? Now let me ask you a question. When you eat, out of these three things, the satisfaction, the immediate satisfaction of taste, the nourishment of the body, and the subsiding of hunger, which one do you think you experience first when you eat? Taste, generally. That comes first. Hopefully. Otherwise, all complaints, somewhere else. Second thing that happens? Hunger subsides. And last thing that happens generally? Satisfaction? Nourishment. Nourishment generally comes later. It's not that when you eat, you're just ready to like go for it. Like, boom, okay, I've had lunch. Now I'm just ready to go for it. Usually it's the other way around. After you eat, like, every afternoon I see, like, I don't know, David, he's not here. David is like a regulated sadhu. He's just like, every day after lunch, he's like 15 minutes LSD. Left side down. And he does it like proper sadhu style, like no pillow, nothing. He's just like that, 15 minutes, boom. And it really is only 15 minutes. I've been watching him. Because generally, after you eat, it takes some time to digest and then feel the nourishment. It doesn't come immediately. So sometimes we may think, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, but where is this bhakti pareshanu? Where is this pareshanu bhaveo virakti? Where is this direct experience of the Lord that the Bhagavatam talks about? I'm not experiencing the Lord. I'm not experiencing Krishna. That generally comes in more mature stages of spiritual life. So at what stage of spiritual life do we actually begin to experience Krishna? That's then the next interesting question. Could you just turn that around? Yeah, I've got a surprise here. So if we want to know at what point in spiritual life we begin to experience Krishna in his most tangible way, then the insights are given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambini. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his infinite wisdom, just takes two verses from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami, and then he writes a whole book on it. Ado shraddha tatha sadhu sangotha bhajana kriya tathanartha nivritti shya tato nishtha ruchis tatha atha shaktis tato bhavas tatha prema byudanchati sadhakana mayam premna pradurbhave bhavet kramaha. Two verses, finished. He just takes two verses from Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and he writes a whole book on it, Madhurya Kadambini, explaining the journey from Shraddha to Prem. We begin in devotional service with faith. Then we associate with devotees. So it goes from inclination. Faith means to have some inclination towards practicing bhakti. And then the next thing we do is association. After we associate with devotees, then the next thing is application. Because it's not too long after you're with the devotees that they actually tell you, all right, like do something now. Do some chanting, do some service, do something practical. Like, this is not just a theoretical movement. Rita Ananda Maharaj is a PhD, Harvard. Like, Prabhupada even said transcendental intelligence. But you know, Rita Ananda Maharaj said, he said that the thing I liked most when I came to LA Temple, I was going to Harvard, I was going to all these universities, I was reading all this theology, but when I came into LA Temple, they told me the theology, and then the next moment they gave me a mop, and they told me to mop the floor. He said, this is the theology, and this is the practice. And he said, for the first time in my life, I was so happy because I actually found a theology and a philosophy that you could do something with, that you could actually apply in your life. So, application. From that comes anartha nivritti, purification. From that comes nishta, conviction. From that comes ruchi, attraction. From ruchi comes ashakti, connection, deeper attachment. And then from there comes bhava, which means spiritual emotion. And then finally prema, intoxication. So it's an easy way to remember it. Inclination, association, application, purification, conviction, attraction, connection, emotion, intoxication. Finished. That's it. That's the whole journey. Shraddha to prema. Done. If we look closely at this progression, then we see that in the beginning stages of this journey, the first two stages, our primary focus is a change of identity. Yes, the process is there. Yes, Krishna is there. But the main thing we're changing in the beginning of spiritual life is just our identity, how we function, our friend circle, how we speak. Isn't it? When you come to the Krishna consciousness movement, devotees tend to speak a little bit different. Isn't it? No one in the world uses words like bona fide or topmost. You ain't going to find no one in the world that uses words like that except devotees. No one uses words like fried out or spaced out. Only devotees use those words. So in the beginning, we're adjusting to what it means to be a devotee, how to speak, how to dress, the culture, how to function with other Vaishnavas. It's mainly about identity change. But when we become a little bit more serious, we're kind of like, yeah, this is not just about identity. This is not just about externals. Spiritual life is about an internal transformation. So then when we get onto Bhajana Kriya, then the focus becomes not identity, but process. Now we're following very much thinking of what is the process of spiritual life, how to chant, how to read, how to go deeper in the angas of bhakti, how to practice without committing offenses. All of these things, our focus tends to be the process. But what happens is as we advance more and more, then it's not that we stop practicing the process, but what then begins to come to the forefront is Krishna. Because the best thing about the Krishna consciousness movement is not prasadam, not retreats, not philosophy. The best thing about the Krishna consciousness movement is Krishna. Because if food is without Krishna, it ain't prasadam. If philosophy is without Krishna, it ain't divya gyan. If music is without Krishna, it ain't kirtan. So Krishna is the most cherished, sought after object. As George Harrison says, everyone is looking for Krishna. Some know, some don't. So we're looking for Krishna. So as the process deepens, what happens is not that we stop practicing the process, but Krishna comes to the foreground. Madhurya Kadambini explains that between ruchi and a shakti, there's a slight change that takes place. In ruchi, one has attraction, but the attraction is mainly towards the angas of bhakti. But in a shakti, what happens is the attraction is transferred towards Krishna coming in the forefront. Prabhupada sometimes gives the example that when a boy and girl are in love, then it doesn't matter what they do. They can go to the cinema, they can go to the park, they can go here, there. Really, the activity that they do together is secondary. The most important thing is that they're together. So in Ashakti, one actually is to some extent indifferent about the anga that they're practicing because Krishna has come to the foreground. So, in our life, we are, most of us here, and most of the devotees who are attending the morning classes, have probably gone beyond the first stage of identity. We've surrendered to the identity of being a devotee. And maybe right now our focus is the process of Krishna consciousness. But now the challenge for all of us is to go from having the focus on the process and practicing the process with great diligence and enthusiasm, as Rupa Goswami says, utsahan, nischaya, dhairyat, and now maturing that to bring Krishna to the forefront. so that in everything we're doing, Krishna is more present, there's more consciousness of Krishna, there's more sensitivity towards Krishna, and in this way there's more interaction with Krishna. And in this way, sevan mukhe hi jivado svayameva spuratyada, by purifying our senses through the process of devotional service, we actually come to the point where we can actually meet Krishna. So this is a path of grace. We cannot see Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a wonderful disciple, very, very qualified. His name was Sundarananda Vidya Vinod. And Sundarananda Vidya Vinod was the one who was to compile the biography of Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So one day he was compiling information from his spiritual master about his biography. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, with tears in his eyes, began to say to Sundarananda Vidya Vinod, "I can summarize my whole philosophy. My whole philosophy, my whole teaching to the world, I can summarize through Drig Drishya Vichar. The philosophy of the seer and the seen." What did he mean by this? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur began to explain, there are two things. There is drashta. Drashta means the seer. And drishya means the seen. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "I can summarize my whole philosophy through the teaching of the seer and the seen." What did he mean by this? Are we the seer or are we the seen? What do you think? Seer. Seen. Yes, we are seen. This is the shift one has to take. One has to qualify themselves, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, that don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. Once Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came in front of the deities, as we know, he was wearing glasses. So this day, particular day, he came and he wasn't wearing glasses. So one of the disciples said, Guru Maharaj, I'll go and get your glasses so you can take darshan properly. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his infinite humility, said, "I will not see Krishna through these glasses. Factually, I cannot see Krishna, but I'm coming in front of Krishna so Krishna will see me." That's the point. So, we will only be able to enter Krishna's world when all of the anarthas have been cleared. Therefore, again, to Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one disciple came, he said, "Guru Maharaj, I was on the banks of the Yamuna, I saw Krishna." I mean, that's a dangerous thing to say to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, "I saw Krishna." Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at him and said, "Are you also seeing Maya?" No, Guru Maharaj, I saw Krishna. Okay, that's fine. Are you also seeing Maya sometimes? So, then you are not seeing Krishna. Because yaha Krishna, taha nahi Maya radhikar. Krishna Surya Sama Hoya Maya Andhakar Yaha Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Radhikar. Wherever there is Krishna, there is no Maya. So the fact that we are in Maya, the fact that we still have Vastu Abhinivesh, absorption in other things, means we will not see Krishna. So in the eighth shower of the Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the meditation on Krishna and how it deepens. So he says in Bhajana Kriya, there is a meditation on Krishna, but it is broken and there are many, many other objects of meditation in one's consciousness. Then he says in Nishta, the meditation on Krishna is there, but there's still some trace of meditation on other things. Then he says in Ruchi, there is no more trace of meditation on other things, and one's meditation on Krishna is continuous. Then he says in a Shakti, not only is the meditation on Krishna continuous, but the meditation goes deep. And then he says in Bhava, Krishna appears in your meditation. I mean, I'll let you know what it feels like when I get there. I mean, it's like, Krishna appears in the mind. And then he says in Prema, one interacts with Krishna in that meditation. In this way, Vishwanath Chakravarti's Thakur is explaining how one's meditation on Krishna intensifies as one progresses in devotional life. So here we're hearing about Gopal's transcendental activities, and Prabhupada is explaining that we can only perceive those transcendental activities through transcendental senses. So that is our aspiration as Vaishnavas, to go through this process where ultimately we're coming to the point where we meet Krishna. And I'll end on this point. Sometimes I feel like there's a wall of false ego between us and Krishna. We're just not able to see Krishna because there's so much false ego which is blocking us. But then what we do is every day we practice the chanting, we practice the service, we practice being humble. And every day when we apply ourselves to the process, then what happens is you take one brick out of that wall of false ego between you and Krishna. One brick comes out. And through that brick, maybe you get some glimpse, oh, what's on the other side? And then you wake up the next day and you take one more brick out, get a little bit more of a glimpse. And then one next day you take another brick out, another brick out, another brick out. And then after many days of taking bricks out of this thick wall of false ego, then one day what happens, because you've taken enough bricks out, boom, the whole wall comes down. And then one sees Krishna. So that is our aspiration, that's what we're looking for. To have that connection and that exchange with Krishna. But it's not cheap and it's not immediate. And just as nourishment in the process of eating is usually something which is experienced at later stages, similarly the deeper exchanges of direct reciprocation with Krishna may not come immediately. We may get some glimpse, but they may not come immediately. But still, we should not be discouraged as long as the other things are happening. As long as we're feeling joyful, as long as we're experiencing the satisfaction of devotional service, and as long as we can see our material desires are subsiding, we can understand we're moving in the right direction, and it won't be long. It won't be long if we continue on with the mercy of Vaishnavas, that we get a direct experience and connection with Krishna. So these are just some thoughts I wanted to share with all of you about transcendental Lord and perceiving the Lord through transcendental senses and the journey that we take on the way to that perfectional stage. So I don't know if anyone has any questions, comments, or yes, Jai Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you. That was very nice class, very enlivening. I think everyone can agree. Prabhuji, you were talking about top of the pop songs and things like that. And I was wondering, like, when Lord Chaitanya heard some mundane songs and then it invoked his deep feeling for Radha and Krishna. And some of these lyrics in these mundane songs have those things. So my question is, sometimes when you listen to this, can they actually invoke some of those kind of feelings like Mahaprabhu got, you know, invoked through listening to mundane songs?
Yeah. When you were saying that, I just remembered once Gurudas was giving class here. And in the middle of his song, in the middle of his class, he sang that song by Bryan Adams. Was that song? Remember that song? Yeah, that one. Yeah. I'm not even going to attempt to sing that one. But he sang that whole, I mean, it wasn't even like 30 seconds. I mean, he sang like the whole thing, you know? So, everything I do.
So, I mean, that's in that song, I mean, you can relate to
Krishna.
Yeah,
but that's the point. And that's the point he was making, that actually all of these things can relate to Krishna. It's interesting, when you look at Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu was written by Rupa Goswami. But you will be familiar because you're a dramatist. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is based on the writings of Bharat, right? Bharat Muni? Bharat Muni, and it's all about drama. See, it's nothing spiritual. Bharat Muni wrote this whole book about drama and the aesthetics of drama. So how, when you're doing drama, how to like invoke different emotions in people by, you know, a bit of comedy and then this and then these subtle kind of things you move. So it's a whole science of how to do drama. But then what Rupa Goswami did is he took it. And he actually explained how that actually explains the aesthetics of rasa with Krishna. So he actually took something that was mundane and then used that framework to explain the whole rasa theology between Krishna and his devotees. Ultimately, aham sarvasya prabhavo, everything comes from me, janmadya shayataha. But people just misdirect it. So everything is ultimately coming from Krishna. But it's just in a perverted way. So yeah, I guess all of these songs in one way, they are. Yeah, I mean, it's spot on actually, if you think about the lyrics of many of these songs.
Yeah. Like, love actually really hurts without you, isn't it? So life hurts without Krishna.
Yeah, all of these songs, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I think we, yeah. But yeah.
You're saying it's okay to listen to them?
We won't replace those songs with Radha Madhava for now. We'll just stick with the tradition. Yeah.
Harish, thank you for the class. My question is regarding when we say that as our bhakti goes deeper and our senses, they kind of diminish and we develop transcendental senses. So is it that the transcendental senses is on the on the subtle platform, or the same senses will actually help you to taste or interact with Krishna? I mean, how does it work?
Prabhupada quoted, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochane Na Shanta Shadeva Ridayo Shivalokayanti. He talked about how one's eyes, which are smeared with the salve of pure love. So it's not that when you have transcendental senses, the color of your eyes change. You still might have blue eyes or brown eyes or whatever it is. But the difference is those senses are now not covered by material conception, but those senses are coated by pure love. And with senses coated with pure love, then one can actually perceive the transcendental reality. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it wasn't that his material frame changed. Or Srila Prabhupada, it wasn't that their frame changed. They were still having the senses as we have the senses, but how are those senses functioning? What is the interaction of those senses with the world? Because those senses are salved with pure love, smeared with love, then through that one can see. But it's just words, to be honest. How will we ever understand these things, you know? The only way you'll understand is, isn't it? By experiencing it. There's a line like that in the Matrix, right? No one can explain what the Matrix is, you know? So it's like that. So to some extent, we're talking about all of these things. In bhava, Krishna appears in your meditation. Like, wow. And it's like, okay, what's for prasadam, you know? I mean, you know, like it's not touching us in the same way because we don't have that realization. So, sevon mukhe hijiva do. Seva. So we learned that from Vaishnavas. Shri Prabhu often used to say that to me, don't try and be happy, and just try and serve. I always found that very profound. The most simple things in life are so profound. He said, don't try and be happy. No, but Prabhu, I want to be happy. I really want to be happy. No, don't try and be happy. Just try and serve. Serve the Vaishnavas. Serve Krishna. Serve the mission. And it comes. So service is so important. One sannyasi, he says, I don't know how much love I have for Krishna. I don't know how much love I have for Krishna, but I love to do devotional service. So that's nice. That's really nice. Do you love to do devotional service? You may say, no, love for Krishna, too far. But do you love to do devotional service? If you love to do devotional service, then you're there. It will come. Everything will come. So let us fall in love with doing devotional service. That is the goal. Thank you, Cyrus. 85%.
That, so that's, it's not 100, so there's still a doubt. So thank you for the class. You're really getting good at this. In my humble opinion,
I don't know. It's
by Krishna's mercy, Halliwell.
By your encouragement.
Yeah, Prabhu, I've heard of the dark night of the soul. I don't think it's something we use in Krishna consciousness, but in other traditions, I've heard darkness of the soul. Could you say which stage and the devotional scale you'd find someone else,
Jai Krishna. You want to say something? Well, yeah, Niskanchana, I was going to say also. I don't know. I heard this concept, dark night of the soul, but in relation to this.
Dark night of the soul is a Christian concept, but Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj does mention it in the Spiritual Warrior books. philosophically speculating here. I would personally say when you look at these stages, dark night of the soul is where, you know, where you're not getting the full reciprocation, the nectar, you know, you're going through the kind of like tapasya and things like that, purification. I would say
Anartha Nivritti.
It seems like that's probably the closest stage we have to correspond with dark night of the soul. And I think for a lot of sadhakas, that's probably the longest period they have, isn't it? So, yeah. It's like you come to Krishna consciousness, you get some initial... Oh, you come to spirituality, you get some initial drops of reciprocation from God, from Krishna, and then it kind of inspires you to carry on. But then what happens after a certain point, God might just kind of like, you know, like regulate the tap of reciprocation on you, and just to see how you can dig deep and just, you know, go inside yourself to actually bring out the bhakti within yourself, to push yourself to go forward. It's almost like one sannyasi gave the example that we leave the... kind of like the, you know, this mirage that we're in right now, mirage of Maya, and we're going to the real green land, but then we have to go through the desert, because, you know, mirages exist in desert, so we're like, you know, in a mirage, but we're now traversing this path of bhakti towards the real land, the real greenery, but we have to cross the desert of purification, the desert of actually letting go of all our mirage and things like that. So it's like a kind of like a, and then sometimes Krishna will give you certain drops along the way to keep you going. But when you're on the desert, you have to really dig deep and go inside yourself and bring out that in that determination, that utsaham, the nishchayat, the dharyat, all those kind of things to keep yourself going. That's the best way I can describe it.
Thank you. Any ladies? Okay, maybe last question. Ian. Oh, sorry, Ian. Last question.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for your class. I just wanted to ask, as we're going through these processes, do we identify where we're at? Because even when you think you're in a particular place, you don't know, you have no factuality. So do people, as they're going through these stages, they are still aloof from understanding where they're at in their spiritual life and they're just keeping on going, or do they have no clue?
Are you asking, as devotees, should we try to look at this and see where we're at?
Yeah.
The first thing to understand is that this is not a linear process. It's not that you do one and the second one. Okay, here's the official medal. You are in Bhajana Kriya. You are now at Nishtha. And then, it's more like, you know, like you see like graphic equalizers? You know what a graphic equalizer is, right? Come on, you know what a graphic equalizer is. You're an artist. So on a graphic equalizer, it's like they're all at different levels, right? So what defines that you're at a certain level? What defines that you're at Bhajana Kriya? It means that is the predominant, the characteristics of that stage are the predominant focus in your life at this point. So in Bhajana Kriya, you're still doing Sadhu Sangha. You're still developing your Shraddha. But it means now your main focus is how to go deeper in your bhajan. How to deal with your anarthas. You know, so of course, we must look at this and try to place ourselves. Especially, anyway, basically for us, let's just deal with the first four. What happens after you get through the first four, and then once you get to like 5, 6, 7, it all becomes very transcendental. So then, because you're in so much love with Krishna, and because you've got so much taste, it's almost like you can't even place yourself. Like someone in prema is like, premera svabhava yaha premera sambandh, se mane Krishna maran nahi prema gandh. The very svabhav of prema is that one thinks, nahi prema gandh, I don't have one drop of love for Krishna. So the premi bhakta is not going to look at this and say, oh yes, prema, that one, that one, that one. Yeah, I got all of those, I'm at prema. No, nahi prema gandh, I have no love for Krishna. So once you get past like 5 and all of that, it just becomes very transcendental. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the first, I think we're dealing with the first 3 showers. Showers means chapters, because he's using that metaphor of clouds and shower of Mahaprabhu's mercy. So he doesn't categorize it in chapters, he categorize it in showers. But the first 3 are really of importance to us. And when we look at it, we will be able to place ourselves. So you look at Bhajana Kriya, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will explain, Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, unsteady devotional service. Then you will definitely look and say, that one, yeah, that's me. That one, that's me. Niyamakshama, struggle with vows, that's me. Ghanatarala, some days up for it, some days not, that's me. Darangarangini, enjoying the facilities of devotional service, that's me. So it's a very amazing book. So you definitely, you look at it, you can map it, you can see the things you have to go through. That's why these books are so valuable. It's not a blind process. Krishna consciousness is not a blind process. And I'll end on this point, just on this point of Krishna consciousness being a blind process. I always found it fascinating when I came to Krishna consciousness. Came to Krishna consciousness, and we use that terminology, whatever it is. We thought very deeply about everything. We questioned everything. We were like very, very introspective, very, very, we were thinking a lot. And it's funny that Krishna consciousness should actually make you more introspective, more deep, more thoughtful. But what generally happens is after we get into the process, we actually become less introspective, less thinking, less reflection, less thoughtfulness. And sometimes I look at like, I write a diary, so then 20 years. So sometimes I look back and I think like, wow, I was so much more, I was questioning so many things then. And now I'm just like autopilot. So there's a danger that we can just become very, very mechanical in our process. And the ultimate way to overcome mechanical process of Krishna consciousness is to make it personal, to make it very personal with Krishna. And therefore, to analyze our journey and to see where we're at. And it's a balance. Not that we just then sit in our room all day analyzing it. Where am I at? Where am I at? And you might figure out where you're at, but you ain't going to move forward like that. So, analysis and action, both. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Gopremanande Hari.